This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
African Union cannot have the luxury of a crisis in one of its key institutions, the Pan-African Parliament.
That was African Union Chairperson Moussa Faki Mahamat urging unity at the Pan-African Parliament. Details coming up also. The Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, says that the Ethiopian government has no regard for press freedom. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. As top leaders from the rival factions in Libya begin meeting, the United States, France, Germany, Italy, and the United Kingdom called on the House of Representatives, the High State Council, and their leaders to finalize the process to hold presidential and parliamentary elections as soon as possible. The joint statement stressed the need for a unified Libyan government able to govern and deliver these elections across the country, achieved through dialogue and compromise, as soon as possible. William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington, discussed whether Libyans will respond to that call with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
But I think the more important question is, are they going to do anything? When I talk to people close to the delegations, I get the sense sometimes that they're doing these negotiations pro forma and without a serious interest in actually coming to a mutual agreement on the elections, because one side, the Bashagha side, believes that they are the rightful heirs to the throne and they should be in power. That said, the Berlin process, the roadmap, the Libya political dialogue forum's plan centers on the idea of elections. It's what the Libyan people want. And so there's pressure, not just from these countries, but from the international community in general, and even more importantly, from the Libyan population to bring in new leaders, to have elections. So it's significant that the statement was released. It's significant that there's pressure on the HOR and the HSC to continue to negotiate and to come up with a basis for elections. But it will probably take more than just convening them to actually force elections to take place. There'll have to be more robust back-channel and front-channel negotiations between the two sides. And I think the issue for the East is fair distribution of the profits of oil. And the issue for the West is a new government based on elections and not based on just the old parliament of 2014 making decisions that they have little legitimacy with the general Libyan Republic to make.
But the parliament designated Prime Minister Fathi Bashagha claimed his government insert is a qualified one to respond to the statement. What's your take on that?
The problem is not that he's the prime minister they designated, and he's a relatively popular man and well-meaning man. The problem is that this parliament was elected in 2014, then waged war on Western Libya for 6 years with the backing of foreign states pouring weapons into Libya and sending mercenaries like the Wagner Group, attacking Tripoli when the UN General Secretary was there organizing a peace conference. And then somehow we said, okay, after all that fighting, they get to pick the prime minister on their own now after they stopped elections from taking place in December. I mean, it's a ridiculous assertion that somehow, because this parliament that has no national legitimacy anymore, they get to decide who's prime minister after they helped block elections. So it's just not going to happen. Bashagha has tried to take power by force 3 times since he was named, and militia in Tripoli fighting back prevented him from taking power. So in my opinion, this is a non-starter, and they're going to need either elections, which is the preferred path, or a new unity or interim government where both sides have a say, not just one side.
The joint statement, however, said that the Libyan Political Dialogue Forum's roadmap set the expiration of the transitional phase on June 22nd, provided that The presidential and parliamentary elections were held on December 24th of last year, which has not been the case. The rival unity government of Abdelhamid Dbeibah picked that portion of the statement to validate his continued legitimacy. Was that the intent of the joint statement?
It's unclear. Both Dbeibah and the UN itself has taken a strong position that you can't say that the interim government needs to be expired if there's been no elections. I mean, even if it was not the intent, it's a logical conclusion to draw that if you don't have elections, you have to have a continuing interim government or a negotiated new interim government to replace it. But you don't just go into political vacuum because of some arbitrary date after you were supposed to have elections. And
that was William Lawrence, a professor of international relations at the American University in Washington. He was speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. Libya's ambulance service said today the bodies of 20 migrants who got lost in the Libyan desert near Chad have been found. Each year, thousands of migrants from sub-Saharan Africa attempt the dangerous journey across the desert into Libya in hopes of being able to take a boat to Europe. The United Nations Security Council later today is expected to discuss the deaths of more than 20 would-be migrants who died last week in a mass attempt to enter Spain's Melilla enclave from Morocco. The closed-door meeting is not expected to result in any immediate action, however. The French news agency AFP reports Spain's government today said it will offer total collaboration with the Spanish prosecutor and Moroccan investigations into the death. The United Nations has denounced authorities on the border between Morocco and Spain for using excessive force against the migrants. Moroccan authorities said some of the victims had fallen while trying to scramble over the fence. Few details about the incident were available, but Spanish media showed footage of people on the ground, some with bloodied hands and torn clothes. Authorities in the Senegalese capital Dakar banned a demonstration planned for Wednesday as tensions mount in the run-up to legislative polls. On June 17th, clashes broke out after authorities barred another protest. Opposition figures say three people died and more than 200 were arrested in the clashes. Two members of parliament were arrested, one of whom was handed a six-month suspended term on Monday. Legislative elections to take place on July 31st. For more on the political tensions in Senegal, Douglas Mpuga reached journalist Rene Lake, the director of the news website SeniPlus.com.
You know, Douglas, the tension has been around for several years now because there's been an accumulation of, I don't know if I can call it missteps from the government's perspective, and some also will argue missteps also from the opposition. So it has been created a tension where the overall atmosphere is this idea that President Macky Sall is basically weaponizing the judicial system in order to not go to a competition to fair election with the opposition, but to always being able to eliminate candidates. That happened at the last presidential election with the former mayor of Dakar, Khalifa Sall, and it seems to happening again here with the list of the parliamentarian election list of the opposition. That's from the perspective of the opposition. From the perspective of the government, the idea is, first of all, for Khalifa Sall, they thought that from a legal standpoint, there was an issue, and that's why he had to spend over 2 years in jail. And in this case, for the list of the opposition, they consider that the list was not properly done. So they did not accept the main titular list, but they did accept what they call the suppliant list. And so you have this tension, and it doesn't seem that it will get better anytime soon.
Yeah, authorities have banned demonstrations in Dakar. Would that action help ease the tension?
Yeah, in fact, what happened is yesterday the government made a declaration saying that the manifestation was planned for today is not authorized. And about 4 or 5 days ago, the leader of the opposition, Ousmane Sonko, has clearly stated that He didn't care if the manifestation will be authorized or not. They will happen. So, of course, that created a huge, huge tension in the country. And just literally a few minutes ago, they finally decided not to participate, not to organize this manifestation. And Ousmane Sonko, Khalifa Sall, and other leaders of the opposition had a press conference in which they explained why they decided at the last minute to cancel this manifestation. And their main argument was basically the huge amount of pressure they got from different sections of the society asking them not to do it. First of all, because the Aïd El Kebir, which is, as you know, one of the main, if not the main, Muslim event in Senegal, and is very soon, is in about 10 days. Also, they mentioned the fact that the school are in an examination session, and so that's the second reason they give. They also give a third reason, is what they call the international community, who did ask to postpone that manifestation in order to ease the pressure and the tension in the country. So they decided to postpone it, but he did announce a few minutes ago that tomorrow there will be a big concert of people using pan, people using horns in their car, people using all kinds of tools that can make noise. So for 30 minutes.
René Lake is the director of news website CNNplus.com. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Washington. The Pan-African Parliament has reconvened in South Africa after a year-long break that followed chaotic and violent elections last year. The parliament is due to elect its leadership later today. Following the aborted elections last year, the African Union ordered it to adopt a rotational system to elect its leadership. However, even those regions that have already served are fielding candidates in defiance of that order. Tusokomalo reports from Johannesburg.
Addressing the House during the opening ceremony, African Union Chairperson Musa Faki Mohamed urged members of the parliament to get down to the business of developing Africa, not dividing it.
African Union cannot have the luxury of a crisis in one of its key institutions, the Pan-African Parliament.
He urged members of the House to direct their energy towards resolving hunger and military coups in Africa. Mohamed said the principle of rotation in leadership is the only way to bring peace and unity in the continent. The parliament is 50 nations acclimated into the west, east, central, north and southern regions. Three of them, namely the west, east and central, have already had a chance to occupy the president's seat. However, some of those regions have fielded candidates in defiance of the African Union directive. The East African Caucus supports Albino Abo from South Sudan as president. But the Eastern region already has held the presidency, so this is in direct defiance of the AU's rotational directive. Under that directive, only the North and South should contest for the presidency. Mark Henry Vanan, campaign manager for the Southern African region candidate, Chief Fortune Charumbira, says it is time for AU to read the Riot Act.
The man of South Sudan has never even served a single year in the national parliament. South Sudan doesn't even have a functioning parliament, and today he wants to be the leader of the continental body.
Other members of the House also call for AU enforcement of the rotational system of leadership. South African ruling African National Congress Chief Whip Pemi Majodina challenged the Pan-African Parliament, or PAP, to focus on bread and butter issues affecting the continent.
We must proceed and conclude the business of this session. The citizens of this continent are awaiting for this PAP to have teeth to be able to change the lives of the population of this continent.
The Pan-African Parliament acts as an advisory body to the African Union. It will require 28 members to ratify what's known as the Malabo Protocol, which establishes it as a legislative body. Only a few countries so far have ratified the protocol. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, is an independent, non-profit organization that promotes press freedom worldwide. In a statement recently, CPJ said that the Ethiopian government has no regard for press freedom. I asked Mutoki Mumo, the CPJ Sub-Saharan Africa representative based in Nairobi, about the accusation leveled on the Ethiopian government.
What we are saying as CPJ is that particularly since the war started in late 2020, we have seen repeated episodes of crackdown against the press. And these have manifested in a couple of ways, the most prominent one being these episodes of arrest. So this has been the primary manifestation of the drastic deterioration of press freedom in Ethiopia, though we do recognize that it's an issue that goes beyond just arrest and an issue that crops up in other ways.
Let's talk about this issue that crops up in other ways. Is there an ethnic angle to the whole thing?
Well, I want to be a little bit careful and nuanced by how we talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, as the Committee to Protect Journalists, our job is to defend people who've been targeted, who've been persecuted because of their journalistic work. Now, to address your question directly, this does not mean that other aspects of who they are do not exacerbate their situation. We as CPJ get involved when we think someone is targeted for their journalism, but this does not mean that other aspects of their identity or who they are do not also influence or exacerbate their situation.
What is the latest number of arrested Ethiopian journalists
mm-hmm.
and media workers
mm-hmm.
in the country?
Mm-hmm. As I said at the beginning of this, what we've seen is a pattern of episodes that at certain inflection points, perhaps depending on what's going on with the war or what's going on politically, we see groups of journalists being arrested. The latest episode we've been talking about happened in May, roughly between May 9 and May 26, when we saw a group of journalists being arrested in Bahidar in the Amhara state, and also a group of journalists being arrested in Addis Ababa. These journalists, the group of journalists that was arrested in Bahidar, they were from two different media outlets, Ashara and Sir Media, and they were held incommunicado for weeks. But we understand that last week on June 15, they were presented in court, and we're trying to follow their case to understand what it is they're actually being accused of doing. I think they're going to be back in court in a few days.
Mutoki, there is nothing ambiguous about the government's position. It says these mm-hmm. people intentionally caused public alarm and turmoil, as well as working to cause violence and disturbance among the public under the disguise mm-hmm. of journalism and media work.
Mm-hmm. Listen, every time we research these cases going back, we always try to understand what is the government position. And I am not going to dismiss that it is a very complex situation in Ethiopia right now. And the government, you know, has its duty to protect the public. But I push back strongly against this rationale that is being provided for the arrest of these individuals on a couple of arguments. I argue back. One, if you look at the manner in which these cases are being carried out, and I would emphasize that it is not just this latest incident. It is literally every single, almost every single incident of a journalist arrested going back to the beginning of the war. There is very little show of good faith from the part of the government.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. To all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. The African Union says it is deeply concerned by the escalating military tension between Ethiopia and Sudan after 7 Sudanese soldiers and a civilian were killed in a border dispute. The statement today by the AU chairman, Moussa Faki Mahamat, urged both countries to cease armed hostilities and hold talks. The incident happened in the disputed border area of Al-Fashqa. Sudan says Ethiopian troops encroached on its territory and fired. Ethiopian authorities have denied its government troops were responsible for the killings. A spokesman for the Ethiopian military blamed Sudanese forces for illegally entering Ethiopia and clashing with a local militia. Ties between the countries have deteriorated in recent years amid the long-running border dispute over large swaths of agricultural land in the Al-Fashqa area. Protests against spiraling inflation and other economic woes continue for the second day in Ghana. Yesterday's protest ended in clashes with police and 29 arrests when hundreds took to the streets to denounce price hikes, attacks on electronic payments, and other levies amid an economic downturn. The police say they dispersed the march with tear gas and water cannon after demonstrators turned violent and wounded a dozen officers. A senior member of the local Ghana Arise lobby group that organized the protest, Sami Giyama, told Reuters police had agreed to provide security for the second day of demonstrations. The police did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Frustration has grown in recent months as Ghanaians struggle with rampant inflation amid government efforts to improve the economy, reappreciate the local currency, and avoid a debt crisis. Ghana saw growth slow to 3.3% year-on-year in the first quarter of 2022, and inflation hit a record of 27.6% in May.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday